Morning. It's good to be with everyone today. Thank you, Noah, for leading one of my favorite songs there. It's always one of my dad's favorites, and sometimes I think the older it is, the better it is. But you know, that one certainly is one that I don't think we can sing too much. And it's got a great message in there for us that we should arise and we should be active in the kingdom of God. I want to talk this morning, going back to our series of lessons that we have been doing on David and becoming people after God's own heart. And looking at a section of 1 Samuel that's probably not as commonly known to us as some others. But when we look at the life of David, we do see some consistency in that his life was one that was filled with prayer, usually, and inquiring of God of what direction that he should make. When you look at the Psalms, and the Psalms been written by David, most of the Psalms that you see are really prayers and inquiries and pleas for guidance. And when you look at the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, it repeatedly shows that David was inquiring of the Lord, especially before he was taking actions. I want to just notice a few of those here in 1 Samuel chapter 23. 1 Samuel chapter 23. First Samuel chapter 23, verse 2 says, "Therefore, David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I go and attack these Philistines?' And the Lord said to David, 'Go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah.'" So here David inquiring about, you know, should I go into battle here, and the Lord giving his blessing on that. And you see again in verse 4 of the same chapter, it says, "Then David inquired of the Lord again, and the Lord answered, 'Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand.'" And verse 12, "Then David said, 'Will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul?' And the Lord said, 'They will surrender you.'" And so here you see David continuing to inquire of the Lord repeatedly during this battle. And if you skip over to chapter 30 and verse 8, which part of our lesson today. Verse 8 says, "And David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I pursue after this band? Shall I overtake them?' He answered, 'Pursue, for you shall surely overtake it and surely rescue.'" And if you go over to the second book of Samuel, chapter 2 and verse 1, again it says here, "David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?' And the Lord said to him, 'Go.'" Verse 5 says, "David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, 'May you be blessed by the Lord because you showed loyalty to Saul your Lord and buried him.'" And going to chapter 5. Chapter 5. And verse 19. 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 19. "And David inquired of the Lord, 'Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand?' And the Lord said to David, 'Go up, for I will certainly give the Philistines into your hand.'" Verse 23, David inquired of the Lord. When David inquired of the Lord, he said, "You shall not go up around to their rear and come against them opposite the balsam tree." So you see here, number one, some consistencies here that David is often fighting the Philistines, and he's often inquiring of the Lord about how what should be done. Shall I go up against them? Shall I not? And even here in 2 Samuel, the Lord giving him direction on where it is and how he should be doing doing this battle and strategy. But that being said, even people after God's own heart will hit a difficult streak. And certainly, I think everybody can probably relate to that you have your ups and downs. And when you look at chapter 27 of 1 Samuel, we read about David, you know, losing his way for a little bit. And so when we look at the book of 1 Samuel, if you remember, we see that Samuel was the judge in the land, and much of the first part of the book is talking about his reign as judge. But the people become dissatisfied and want kings like the nations around them, and Saul is anointed king, and Saul has some failures as king, and God chooses for Saul no longer to be king. And it was really Saul's failure to utterly destroy the Amalekites that was the last straw, that you are not going to be king anymore, and David was anointed king, or anointed to be king later. And as we've seen in previous lessons, David had been pursued by Saul after David had killed Goliath, and David had become quite popular among the people of Israel, and Saul got jealous about that. And so lots of things here in David's life that haven't been pleasant. One of the previous lessons that we did on this shows that David fled, and he fled with some of his friends to a cave. And we really didn't do a lesson on his encounter with Nabal and Abigail, but we saw there that I'd say that David and his men during this section are, you know, they're outside of Israel, and they are hiding, and in the case of Nabal and Abigail, you could say that David and his men were kind of highway patrol. And so doing some protecting people, but now we notice here, as Seth read for us in 1 Samuel 27 and verse 1, it is very interesting to me what David says in chapter 27 and verse 1. What do you think David's attitude should be about his situation? Does he know that God is with him? And has God shown that he is with him? Well, what had happened in the past? David was able to kill Goliath with a slingshot and some stones. Is that normal? I mean, is that the weapon of choice? You know, certainly that was not because of David's remarkable skill with the slingshot. It's because God provided that victory. And David being able to escape, you know, the clutches of Saul on many different occasions. You think God had something to do with that too? Of course he did. But what we see here in verse 1 of chapter 27 is that David seems to not be remembering that. Verse 1 says, David said in his heart, "Now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand." Does this really sound like the words of somebody that trusts God? Doesn't. I'm going to die. You know, I've been on the run all this time, and it's eventually going to catch up with me. Saul is going to eventually be victorious in his seeking after me. And so when we think about David, this is not what we usually think about, is it? This is not ever the verse that pops into my head when I think about David. I think about David and Goliath. Or I might think about David and Bathsheba. You know, and so there's some key events in his life that we remember, and so we think of him, and we remember the victories like against Goliath, but we remember also the sin that he committed that was, you know, so pivotal in his life. But, you know, we may not realize the amount of despair that David sometimes felt in his life. I think you can get an indication of that when you look at the Psalms and see that there's a lot of Psalms of praise to God, but there's all a lot of Psalms of, you know, crying out for help against my enemies. And so you can, you know, get the idea of how David's emotions were in his life. But here we see that David is running from, I'll just say, crazy man. He's running from Saul. He's running from this crazed king that wants nothing more to do than to kill David. So we see him hiding in the hills. We see him, you know, leading a crew of soldiers and helping with them. And here we see that David has a lot of despair, and maybe he's just kind of collapsing under the weight of this. And so there's nothing left for me here except, you know, for Saul to kill me, and the best thing for me to do is not to be anywhere around Saul. And so rather than, what do we just read in all these other verses? We see David reaching out to God, reaching out to God, reaching out to God. And what does he not do here? Rather than talking to God and inquiring about what he should do next, he's listening to David, and he doesn't consult God. I'd say he's really consulting himself here, because it says David said in his heart, now I shall perish. So that didn't come from God. That came from David. So rather than talking to God, asking about what he should do next, David listens to his heart and simply consults himself. So just a side note, you hear a lot about listening to your heart today, don't you? And that's, you know, that's the pinnacle for lots of people, is you listen to your heart. Do what your heart tells you to do. And here we have David listening to David. We have David listening to his heart. He said, I just need to get out of here, because he's going to kill me. And there's only one way to get Saul to quit chasing me, and that is just to move out of the reaches of him. Move out of Israel completely. And notice, he just figures his future is certain. He says, now I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me to do than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. And so he's just kind of predetermined that there's no way I'm going to make it out of this situation alive. That's his conclusion. And he's forgotten the promises that he's had. And remember that he was anointed king. He's not king yet. And you know, Samuel anointing him king, being the choice of God, you know, you would think that maybe David would think, you know, there's still some good things in my future here. Because God wants me to be the next king over Israel. Remember that, David? Remember in chapter 23 and verse 17? Let's go back there. 1 Samuel chapter 23 and verse 17. Remember David's best friend, Jonathan. What did Jonathan say about David? He said, and he said to him, do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul my father also knows this. And so David's future is certain, and that's what Jonathan said. The son of Saul said, you are going to be king over Israel. And let's look at chapter 25. 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 30. And this was Abigail who he encountered. And now Abigail is one of his wives after Nabal perished. And David took her as a wife. Chapter 25 and verse 30. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good he has spoken you and has appointed you prince over Israel. And so Abigail is saying this, that God is going to make you king. God is going to make you prince over Israel. And so we have all over the place here David getting assurance of God's plan for him. But David is here outside of Israel, fleeing to the Philistines, saying, I'm going to die. Saul is going to get me. So, and even, you know, Abigail says, even Saul knows this. Saul knows that you are going to be king over Israel. Look at chapter 24 in verse 20. Chapter 24, verse 20. "And now, behold, I know you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand." This is Saul talking. So everybody's in agreement here that you're going to be king, and David seems to be the only one not in agreement with that right now. And so, David gathers up his family, as Seth read for us. David gathered up his family, his armies. He moves to the land of the Philistines, which is kind of ironic in itself. But David comes to Achish, who is king of Gath. And if you recall, you know, Goliath was champion warrior of the Philistines, whose hometown was Gath. So a bit of irony there that this is where David comes. And notice here that David was quite correct that if he would get out of there, Saul would quit following him. So if you look at verse 4, it says, "When it was told to Saul that David had fled to Gath, he no longer saw him." And so David was correct about that. So Saul finds out that David's in Gath. He no longer pursues him. And, you know, I would imagine at this point that David could take a breath. Because we do see that that's been a stressful situation for him. And he's living here, moving in to the land of the Philistines. He can finally go to sleep with both eyes shut and get a house, get the kids enrolled in school, whatever it is he needs to do, and get comfortable in this new place. So what I'm saying here, this is not something, you know, temporary, because he stays there. Verse 20 of chapter 27, verse 7 says that he stays there for a year and 4 months. So this is just not a couple of week, you know, vacation. So David has found some deliverance, you know, by his own hand. Remember, God didn't tell him to go do this. This is something that he did on his own, and he is hiding in enemy territory. He is not with God's people. He's not in God's land. He's in the land of the Philistines. So you could basically say here that David has just, at least temporarily, given up. And does he believe he's going to be king? It doesn't explicitly say that here, that David no longer believes he's going to be king. But, you know, all signs seem to point to that right now, that he feels like he's going to be killed, and Saul's going to get him, and I'm going to get out of here. And so God's promises, you could at least say God's promises are not in the forefront of David's mind at this point. So what does that mean for us? Well, I think that, again, this is probably the first time I have ever done a lesson on this section of 1 Samuel, because we're usually talking about other things. But it's important, isn't it? So what happens when we let go of hope and we start trusting in ourselves? And we no longer trust in the promises of God, and we turn to our own wisdom to get us through. Again, remember what it said in chapter 27. David listened to his heart, and this is what he did. And I think there's a big lesson in that for us, is that you can allow your feelings of despair to overcome you and to overwhelm you. And that is often the time when people turn to themselves and turn away from God. And certainly, you know, Satan wants us to cave in and listen to ourselves and not put our trust in God any longer. And I've often told you, I'm fixing to tell you again, my favorite passages in Mark, the book in the Gospel of Mark, where the women go to the tomb, and the angel tells the women, "Go tell his disciples and Peter that he is risen." Because Peter could have been in deep despair, which I imagine he was after denying Christ when he said that he wasn't going to. And it's as if God is reaching down to Peter and said, don't you give up because I haven't given up on you. Go tell his disciples and Peter. Because Peter could have very well been in deep despair and counted himself out and not worthy of that relationship with Christ. And here, David, who has been told by Samuel and Saul and Abigail and everybody else that's around him, that you're going to be king. You're going to be king. And David's hiding out in the land of the Philistines, in the hometown of Goliath. And so he certainly is giving in to that despair and fear. And isn't it also interesting that in our despair, people turn to enemy territory? What did Peter do? He warmed his hands around the fire. He no longer was with his people. And do people do this today when they are in despair? They plunge themselves into things that they think will fix that. And people may think, well, I need these things. Well, I need to, they turn to alcohol, they turn to drugs, they turn to sexual immorality, all kinds of things that they think will be helpful to them, or abandoning everything that they knew was true and right. Giving up on God is the medicine. No, that's not the prescription for what you need. People will get depressed. They'll get in doldrums. They'll stop coming to services. Maybe not completely, you know, just go once in a while to keep people from asking about it. But what happens when you're no longer actively involved with the brethren? You're no longer active in worship. Why does that happen? Have you ever known that to happen to someone? Has it ever happened to you? When is it that you are no longer active in the things that you used to be? It's probably because something else has crept into your life. And you're throwing in the towel. I knew of a family situation where there was a problem in the marriage. And a lot of people in that area knew about the problems. And so the couple just decided to move somewhere else. That if they move somewhere else, that's going to take care of the issue because they'll be somewhere they can get a fresh start. And you know, maybe I could see a little wisdom in that. But you know what happened when they got to the new area? The heart of the person causing the problem had not changed, and they got into just the same kind of problems that they had in the previous area. It, running away from the problem did not fix the problem because where they were was not really the problem. And so, deciding that you need to go somewhere else, you know, moving to Gath is not the fix to David's problem. There's another problem that needs to be fixed. You know, so physical changes are never going to fix a spiritual problem. Moving's not going to make you happy. Or getting involved in immorality and other things. Is that going to help fix your problems at home? Is drinking going to help you fix your problems at home? Is abandoning morality the fresh start that you need? Certainly not. Physical tweaks in life don't solve the problem. So David here is, he goes and inquires, and he's given a city to live in. He's given the city of Ziklag to live in, which is controlled by the Philistines. And, you know, if you recall, back in Joshua chapter 19, Ziklag was formerly a city that was given to Simeon in the conquest of Canaan. And this really reflects how bad things are in Israel, because this is not Israel territory anymore. You know, this is Philistine territory. So this is an area that was once given to Simeon, but now it's not. Doesn't belong to the Israelites anymore. So what has been happening is that the Philistines have been attacking the southern portions of Judah. They've been successful in their attacks. Achish, the king of Gath, has been sending David and his men on attacks against Judah, ironically. And rather than attack the southern portion of Israel, David has attacked the Geshurites, the Gerizzites, the Amalekites, the enemies of Israel. And so David and his soldiers are engaged in these battles. But David is not attacking Israel personally. So if you, I'm going to go ahead and read all these three chapters. But if you go and read the 27 through 30, what you'll see is that there's this perception that David is not attacking Israel, but he is doing this for a year and 4 months that he's living in the land of the Philistines. And so Achish trusts David, figuring that the people of Israel now hate David because of what's going on here. And so David has not really lost his total moral compass because he's not attacking his own people. But you could say he's not really doing well. He's not doing what God would have him to do. And when you get to chapter 29, it really continues the rest of the story. The Philistines are about to engage in a great battle against the Israelites. The Israelites are lining up. They're preparing for battle. David and the soldiers come out and line up along with the Philistines and attack the Israelites. And I think this, when you look at chapter 29, it really reveals, how far David had defected from Israel. The Philistines do not want David and his men to fight for fear that David will turn against them. And it seems here in verse 8 that David was willing I'm not going to turn on you. Verse 8 says, "But what have I done? What have you found in your servant from the day that I entered your service into now that I will not go and fight against the enemies of my Lord the King?" And so David is upset that they're not going to utilize him to fight against Saul. And so as you read on, David and his men go back to Ziklag. They find the city has been attacked by the Amalekites. The Amalekites have overtaken the city. They've burned it with fire. They've taken captive women and all who were in the city, including David's wives, including Abigail. And so, when you read this, it just doesn't sound like David. It's a really lowest of the lows thus far, I think, in David's life. He's depressed. There are people talking about attacking him, and David's in trouble, and there's people talking about stoning him. And so let's look here in chapter 30 and verse 6. Chapter 30 and verse 6. It says, "David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because all the people were bitter in soul. And David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Abimelech, 'Bring me the ephod.' So Abiathar brought the ephod to David, and David inquired of the Lord." So you can get a sigh of relief here, because this is the first time in three chapters that we've seen that David inquired of the Lord. And so this seems to be the moment where David turns to his senses after nearly a year and a half of nonsense living in the land of the Philistines. And he is now turning to inquire of the Lord. So you could say the light bulb has come on, which they didn't have back then, but you get the point. That it's time to put himself in the hands of the Lord. And so David goes to Abiathar the priest to inquire of the Lord what he needs to do. So God tells David that if he pursues the Amalekites, God will give David a victory. David attacks. What happens? God grants the victory. And they are able to recover their families unharmed. And David has finally come back to the Lord after a big detour. So victory comes because David is now seeking the Lord again. Let's look here at starting in verse 23. Verse 23. But David said, "You shall." Let's back up a little bit. Verse 21 of chapter 30. Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow David and who had been left at the brook Bezor, and they came out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came to the people, he greeted them. Then all the wicked and worthless fellows among the men who had gone with David said, "Because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil. We will not give them any of the spoil that we recovered, except that each man may lead away his wife and children and depart." But David said, "You shall not do so, my brethren, with what the Lord has given to us. He has preserved us and has given into our hand the band that has come against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who goes down into the battle, so shall his share stay by the baggage. They shall share alike." And he made a statute and a rule for Israel that day forward to this day. So what is this saying? That David is saying God's given us the victory and everybody that assisted in this is going to enjoy the spoils of this. And so what you see here is just 180 turn in David's life after this detour. He has this victory, and you see what David is doing here. Who does he attribute the victory to? He's attributing the victory to the Lord. So you could just say, "Welcome back, David. Welcome back." So the applications for us are that even... You can just turn that off, Noah.